Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Here's a minute here, would you, love?
Listen, I've got a lot to say. Fuck all time to say it.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 515 for the week of June 17th, 2024. I am Third Ashley, David T. Cole, and I'm here with VOT Video Squatter, Sarah D. Bunting.
Rewinding is for Antifa.
The smartest woman in the world, Tara Ariano.
Smartest person in the world.
And the octopus in the room, Andrew Cunningham.
Sex is just a spectrum, right, bro?
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is a writer and a podcast host you've heard with us before. It's Andrew Cunningham. Yay! Welcome back, Andrew.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. I'm excited.
Well, hopefully this will be more fun than when you were on the last time to talk about the new Frasier. Boo. We are, in fact, here this time to talk about season 4 of The Boys. Season 3 of the show revolved in part around jockeying for the presidential ticket, ending with the rising progressive Congresswoman Victoria Newman, Claudia DeMitte, being chosen as potential VP to Bob Singer, Jim Beaver. Now it's election night, and since Bob and the CIA know Newman is a secret soup with the ability to explode people's heads from a considerable distance, there is some urgency around her not being allowed anywhere near the presidency. But the boys don't have the focus they once did now that Butcher, Carl Urban, seems like he's losing his edge. What the audience knows, but his compatriots still don't, is that his extensive use of V24 in season 3 left him with a brain tumor that is causing him to hallucinate frequent visits from his dead wife, Becca, Chantel Van Santen. Elsewhere, Homelander, Anthony Starr, is standing trial for laser eye killing the protester at a rally at the end of the last season. And Annie, Erin Moriarty, formerly known as Starlight, is trying to do good through her home for at-risk youth, despite the most right-wing commentators of the VOT media empire messaging that she is a groomer and worse. The first 3 episodes of the 4th season dropped on Prime Video last Thursday. Some of us have watched ahead. We will be very careful about spoilers since Amazon sent us an extensive list of do not reveals for the season.
What were some of those do not reveals, Tara?
Oh, God.
In detail, please.
I was trying.
Yeah, I know. You're starting to look it up. I was like, no. Joke fail. Joke backfire.
End of podcast. I could have do not revealed stuff from the episodes that already dropped, but I won't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's do the Chen check-in. Andrew, should our listeners watch season 4 of The Boys?
Yes.
Sarah?
Yes, but.
Dave?
Season 4 has a lot of the exploding heads you've come to love, but also an extreme amount of wheel spinning. So yes for exploding heads, and yes for the recent knowledge that they're just going to end it next season because they need to.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Agree. Well, let's get into some details. Reviews of this season have been more mixed, I think, than in the past. A lot of the negatives revolving around what I think we can agree is a lack of subtlety around its satire of Trump and Trump followers. Is it too much or just enough, given that some of the show's viewers have historically been too dumb to get it? Andrew, your thoughts.
But that's got to be painful, right, Andrew? Like, if you create something and you realize a big chunk of the people that are enjoying your show
mm-hmm.
are not enjoying it for the right reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this would, you know, I think shows like, if you want to take like your Breaking Bads or your Sopranos, is they didn't have to have episodes where Tony Soprano turned to the cameras. Like, you know that I'm about, like, the banality of evil, right? Like, you know I'm not the good guy. Mm-hmm. And this show apparently does have to do that. Like, I don't even know if, can we qualify this as satire technically? Because it's pretty straightforward. It's a little bit like latter seasons of Veep in that way, where mm-hmm. like reality has become difficult to satirize. And so here we are.
Yes, directly quoting people's like buzzwords and buzz phrases mm-hmm. from the actual news.
There's a moment early in this first episode where Homelander calls somebody a soft on crime fucking libtard. And I'm just like, oh, okay, this is where we are.
yeah,
in this universe right now.
Sarah, mm-hmm. Was this what your butt is?
Sarah, tell us about your big butt.
I cannot lie. As long as it's not splitting off into myriad different butts, I guess we can get to that.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Richard Codes, stunt cock, maybe. If not good for him, here's my point. Tara, I think your review hit on this, which I had in my notes before reading your take on it, which is that this used to be a little more sort of pleasurable to watch as a perfecting of the world that we actually live in, whereas now it's just reflecting the world that we live in. And it's not like, not that this show was designed to be relaxing, but now it just feels like, oh, we're watching real life, but with, not in my house, but more swearing and more giblets that used to be people's brains flying around. It's not as like satisfying or rewarding to just watch this version of what we're all basically in all the time anyway. Yeah. And they're also kind of, I thought that the satire of the like Marvel or like superhero based IP tentacles that are just in every aspect of life, that it's like your vault, low flow toilet, whatever. When they were focused a little more on that, you could at least sort of take a breath and not be in this superhero populated version of what's already existing. So yeah, sure. That's the but for me. And also it does kind of seem like there's some filler, like some of these scenes don't need to underline that Homelander is bad quite so much. Although if Antony Starr does not get a Emmy or some sort of recognition for this, I'm going to be very upset because he's brilliant.
I think you're going to be upset, unfortunately.
Yeah, probably.
Dave, what are your thoughts on this? You already mentioned the wheel spinning.
Right. There's that. And just as sort of surprising that we've actually, as a culture, managed to move beyond the Verhoeven pole of satire, of subtle Verhoeven satire. Now we have to deal with the boys, which is, you know. So, yeah, part of it is that. And what I was saying earlier is, like, from a creator's perspective, like, I think the unfortunate reality is they could play the game where they're like, oh, you know, they're not really disappointed that a chunk of the audience is taking it completely the wrong way, but it's got a stick in their craw. And I think this is a reaction to that, whether it's conscious or subconscious.
Yeah.
And it does sort of, I don't want to say take you out of it because it was never, you know, like really subtle in the first place, but there is sort of a mood change to it where it does feel like more of a direct reaction to things that are happening in our world rather than commenting on the state of our world through another, which is sort of what they were doing before.
Totally.
Yeah. This is also the first season of The Boys that we've gotten since Gen V, which was last fall. Obviously, the stakes over there are lower, or they were for most of the season. But for me, that season which was much more fun for that reason. And the sort of glimpses of it that we get in season four of The Boys, I don't think it's a spoiler to say the two shows cross over in various ways. There were a lot of times where I was like, no, I'd rather follow those characters back because it was so much less like fraught, I guess. I don't know.
But it's also, speaking to the wheel spinning part of season four, I remember previous to the announcement this week that season five was going to be the last, that they were saying, oh, this could go on forever. You know, we got so many ideas. And then, like, this really did seem like it was inserted in that uncertainty zone where, like, maybe we'll do 10 of these seasons. But, you know, in the back of my mind, that feels wrong. It's sort of the thought process that I imagine, because Homelander, we've already gone through the Homelander, like, should I inject a little bit of humanity into the way I raise my son? Season three already happened. Bully Butcher, should I inject some humanity into the way that I deal with the rest of the team? Already dealt with season three. They start the same loop in season four. And spoiler, not really. By the end of season four, guess what? We're right back to where we were in season three insofar as those things happen. And everybody, almost everybody has a similar sort of looping back on itself arc as far as their personality and their circumstances go.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're not waiting to be able to respond with a take, so to say, on things that are actually happening. Like, I kind of wonder if that, what Dave said was really well put, that like, this was sort of self-generating, but now it feels much more, not dependent on IRL headlines, but like it might be kind of waiting to see how everything turns out. And if they were, you know, if this is going to be wish fulfillment or something else. I don't know if that's true. I still enjoy the show, but it does seem to have shifted in that way a little bit.
Yeah, like what I think still continues to leaven it is, you know, there is enough character stuff going on and everybody's cast well enough that you still just enjoy watching everyone.
Yeah.
And then it's just funny. It's just a funny show. And there are shows like, I was talking with someone about Handmaid's Tale, where it's like, you know, of the moment sort of social commentary, satire, but is it really?
Yeah.
And that show was so just like oppressive and airless and joyless for me in so many ways that I just couldn't keep watching it. But I do keep coming back to this for exchanges, like when the Seven are sitting in their big, you know, conference room at the top of this building, and Homelander says, "I'm surrounded by sycophants and fucking imbeciles." And the Deep says, "It's just that you make a lot of really great points."
So good.
And just any show, I mean, maybe it's just any show with the Deep in it, I would keep watching until they just stopped making it. But
yeah.
But yeah, it's got just enough comedy in it, just enough like pathos in it, just enough other stuff happening. That I'm still really, I am still in the bag for it, but I agree that, you know, the balance has continued to shift. And I think it's been shifting the whole time, like from sort of Marvel send up to real world social satire. And if that is something that bothered you about previous seasons, especially the last season, I think it's going to bother you more here now because there's so much more of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do think the possibility of like, we could do this forever, that exists more in Gen V because it is less, it's less topical. Like it can be, it can be more of like, it's our take on a college show versus it's our take on the end of the world. You know, that also comes up. But anyway, yeah. Homelander's stress this season about aging and like collecting all his gray pubes. It just really made me miss when he got to be funny because he's such a funny character at the beginning versus where he's ended up, you know, also like at the victory party, like, I don't want to miss Smash Mouth. Of course he doesn't. Of course he would.
No, of course he doesn't.
So I get the narrative drama of disabling Butcher, but has the show lost too much by sidelining him, or does it not make that much of a difference? Andrew, your thoughts.
With a character like that, who's a huge, who's like central to it, but also is a huge dick to everybody and is just constantly alienating and being pulled back in by people, I do think there's a line to walk, and maybe they've gone too far over it with him, like doing too many unforgivable things to too many people. And on the topic of wheel spinning, like this, if you've watched the first three episodes, you know, there's a lot of teasing about like, what is going on inside of the head and body of Billy Butcher?
Yep.
Once or twice an episode, you get a little like, hey, this is still going on. Don't you wonder what's happening? And at a certain point, you just kind of want them to get to the next thing so we can move on to whatever it is after that. Like, if it feels like to me, especially knowing the last season is going to be the last one, or the next season is going to be the last one, that he's not going to end up like dead at the end of this. Probably. I haven't watched all the way to the end. I don't know, but it would feel like a weird choice to make for the star of the series. So it's a little bit like, yeah, I've watched TV before. I know how this is going to work. I just kind of would like you to get on with it a little bit, please.
Not that the comic book is at all the path of the TV show anymore. It stopped being a long time ago, but I do believe in the comic book, he dies at the end.
Yeah. The other problem for me with his storyline this season is, and I hate to say a child is a dud, but that's how I feel about Ryan. Sorry.
It's too bad for poor Ryan, who is a child who is at a very, very awkward age. And I think is probably pitching his voice up to sound younger than, because his voice has changed. Yeah, I can't say that for sure.
Yeah. I thought it was just ADR the whole time. I didn't think it was his voice even. I thought
it could be. Yeah. You could be right about that. But yeah, it's, you know, child actors are iffy at the best of times. And this is a hard age to be like on camera in front of people. So I feel for him, but I also agree. Yeah. The character is not really doing much for me at this point.
Any defenses of Ryan? No.
Yeah. It's a hard place to put an actor in. Yeah.
Yeah. Also from, I'll say, the who cares department, Huey's estranged parents. Don't care. Yeah. Huey, get over it. You're like 30 years old.
Yeah. Did we see Simon Pegg in the first three episodes?
Yes.
Okay. His American accent continues to be terrible.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, you
hear him on a voicemail.
You have to be impressed with the acting talent that they're still pulling and like the level of fame that they're still getting for like Michael J. Fox playing a kidney levels of screen time, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give anything away, but even on the sort of like, here's this one character that's going to have this enormous fight scene in which there are like 17 of him running around naked. Mm-hmm. You know who that was for? One guy. That's me, Buncey, who was like, Richard Code. Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Naked Richard Code. Not here for it. And then killed off. Like, I'd love their depth of bench acting wise. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of why I definitely will be in until the end, that even though it's like so on the nose that it is a nose, which then explodes in terms of the quote satire, it's so well executed by the actors and, you know, the writing to an extent, even though it's too literal, mm-hmm. that it's a pleasure to watch, even when they're just sort of spinning their wheels and dicking around. There's good character mm-hmm. work that's happening. And so I'm in, I guess, especially it's not that much longer. Why not?
For those who don't know him by his Felicity character name, that's Rob Benedict, who has a very memorable role in the second episode, who is also from Eric Kripke's other show, Supernatural. And we see Huey's mother finally long estranged. And I'm never sad to see Rosemary DeWitt cash a check.
Yeah, but exactly.
Like, yeah. The other funny thing about that second episode is that the big action set piece does take place at a Marvelous Mrs. Maisel themed bat mitzvah.
Sure does. Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to have cross show promotion on your streaming TV channel, Amazon, it should at least be like this. Like this was very
That was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like the opening to Ms. Marvel done so much better. Not the opening, but the scene where she goes to like Avenger Con or whatever and all the shit happens. Mm-hmm. It kind of felt a bit like that, but like executed on a higher level.
Yeah. So we get two new major soups this season. I feel like there's not much to say about Firecracker. She's like the Marjorie Taylor Greene-alike, except even more fringe. But we get Sage, aka Sister Sage for racist bot purposes. Mm-hmm. Played by Susan Hayward, she is the aforementioned smartest person in the world. I like where they go with her in some respects, related to how her power actually works on a physical level, which comes in later episodes. But I feel like we don't see enough about her motivations for joining forces with Homelander or anyone else have feelings about Sage.
I don't know that I need her to have more motivation than just like, I'm super smart and I'm bored. Like, just here's something to do with it.
Fair.
Right.
And I do like, you know, each season has had its own sort of, because, you know, when you have a character like Homelander, who is like Captain America meets Superman, like functionally invincible, and you don't have in this season, like you had like Soldier Boy last year, like mm-hmm. a character who can, or even Butcher, like when he was on like Temp V, like a character who can physically check him to make it interesting and to keep providing like intra-character conflict, you still have to give him something that he feels intimidated by. And I can buy him as a white man who wants to be loved by everybody being like intimidated by a very smart woman. Like I buy that. And I like their interplay in these first few episodes, like before, you know, her larger plot really starts like kicking into high gear. So, yeah,
I agree with that. I think I said in my review, it's always, he is so good. It's always interesting when they give him someone new to play off consistently. I think that's been the case. Let's finally touch on the reference from Andrew's intro name, Ambrosius, the Deep's neglected octopus girlfriend, voiced by Tilda Swinton. That was certainly one of the big do not reveals. Andrew, you chose her for your intro. What were your feelings about this character?
Just everything about, I mean, beyond even the character, everything that about the set design for the closet that the Deep keeps her in, where it's like all the old unsold copies of his book and a little like action figure of the Deep at like a big old timey ship steering wheel, like in her tank, like just everything about the way that they have made that set. Mm-hmm. I could just watch it over and over again because it's there's just so much to look at and to see. But yeah, man, the Deep and Octopi, what's the deal with this? They keep coming back to this well, and it keeps working.
I don't think it's a well. I think it's the ocean. But yes, I hear your point.
Sure. Well, it's the world's biggest well, if you think about it.
There you go.
It's time to go around the dial talking about what we've been watching on TV lately. First up, Tara.
So we're six episodes as we record this into the current season of Drag Race All Stars, which followed right on the heels of the last flagship show, which ended in April. This season, for the first time on All Stars, the returning queens are up playing for charity, which is great. I'm not against charity. This season, not for the first time, there are no eliminations. The queens are playing for beautiful benefactress badges, and in each episode, the top two queens lip sync. The winner gets $20,000 for her charity, plus the chance to use oversized scissors, they call the ruby snippers, to cut off another queen from getting to win a badge the next week. And they can still win challenges and money, but the finals determine based on who has the most badges at the end, and the ultimate winner will get $200,000 for their charity. And if that all sounds needlessly complicated, I agree. And every time we get a cut to a queen giving a talking head about who better not cut them off because they haven't gotten any badges yet, whereas some people have three badges, and are they the front runners or not? You can tell they are a little embarrassed about this, like, kindergarten shit. Like, considering how big the amounts of money are, it's surprising. But the no elimination format also means basically no one ever gets a bad critique because RuPaul and the judges all have to prop up the idea that all of these queens are great all the time and worth watching for the entire season when... Sorry, but I feel like Miss Angie is the only one I would say is a marquee draw. Poor Chanel from season one is just in over her head. The last time they did this for the All-Star season of with a, all winners, which was the last time they did no eliminations, one of them was Evie Oddly. And again, sorry, she is one of the worst winners ever. None of the tongue bath critiques she got for her All-Star season convinced me, or I dare say anyone else otherwise. So I'm still watching because I'm a simp for the franchise, but this season is definitely a deep background show for me. It's good accompaniment to making Dawson's Creek gifts. So if you wonder what I was doing when you look at those, that's what. This is fine because I assume the next real season is coming in like August, unless Paramount goes under before then. TBD.
So wait.
Yes.
You have to win a badge to get a chance to win money for your charity. And one of the mechanics in this charity season is you can stop people from getting badges.
They can still win money for their charities. They just won't get the chance to. It limits their chances to be in the final for the big money. But they can win $20,000 for that episode.
Still. Weird mix.
Yes, I agree. Okay. It's all very needlessly complicated and overthought yet underthought at the same time.
Survivorize RuPaul's Drag Race by 30%, please.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of overthought yet underthought, Hannah Einbinder from Hacks has a new stand-up special on Max, and I reviewed it at Cracked. The link to that is in the show notes.
Andrew, what have you been watching recently?
One quick one and then one slightly longer one. I just want to pour out the smallest one imaginable to Star Trek Discovery, which did finish airing its last season a couple of weeks ago as we record this. Right. It's never a show I loved. It was a weird season that I think showed the strain of both like the writer's strike and also having been retrofit as a series finale after it had already been mostly written and shot. I'll always be glad that it brought Star Trek back to TV because there are other better shows that are on TV now because of Discovery.
Right.
But it never figured itself out the way that I think it really needed to. So.
I remember ditching it. I think it was the season that they introduced the burn, like when they go into the future. And I'm like, I can't. This is not hitting for me at all. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you this, Andrew. We recently learned that Starfleet Academy, the new show that's in progress, that they're we just found out that takes place in the first class in Starfleet after the burn takes place that we never see in Star Trek Discovery. We just hear about, right?
Okay.
Is that a good setting for you? Can you see the possibilities there, or is that just frustrating?
I think it's interesting to keep it that far in the future instead of like keeping it in like the same continuity as like the 60s shows or the 90s shows and just having to like fight amongst all of those for just like canon and for other things. So right. I think it'll be all right. Yeah. Right. I mean, there is one quick plot point and then I'll stop talking about Discovery in season 5 where a character who's working at Starfleet Academy decides to set up a mentorship program. I'm like, this is like a 900-year-old institution. Are you guys just now getting around to mentorship programs? Yeah, like, what's your curriculum? But the main thing I wanted to talk about actually is The Simpsons, which I know is near and dear to all of our hearts. About a year ago, Jesse David Fox at Vulture did a piece called The Simpsons is Good Again, detailing some behind-the-scenes changes the show had made in recent years to kind of freshen itself up. I've been hurt before. I didn't go right to the show and start watching it again after I read that piece, but I did start recently, and I've been watching stuff from like season 33 on. 33 and 34 are on Disney Plus, and 35 is a Hulu thing. I don't know why. That's just the way it is right now. And it's not like it was, because it could never be like it was, but there is something comforting about watching like a deep double digit episode of The Simpsons and having it not feel like some like sweaty, room written, try hard mess. Like, there are episodes where Homer talks about TikToks, but you're not like vicariously embarrassed for everybody who was involved in bringing that to television. So yeah, it's kind of refreshing. Like the second episode of the 35th season is an episode where Marge gets food poisoning and starts having nightmares about all of her kids growing up too fast. And like, ignoring the fact that Bart should be like 50 years old, as a dad, I was kind of surprised that this show that's been on for so long was able to kind of effectively tap into a very modern and like relevant to me sense of like parental anxiety. So yeah, like I always thought it would be possible for the show to be like Bob's Burgers is now, like just a reliable B+, like character driven cartoon week to week. And they finally kind of figured it out, and it's nice. I'm happy for them.
All they needed was 33 years.
Yeah, right.
Where can people find you on the web, elsewhere, Andrew?
My TV podcast, Appointment Television, is defunct, but I do have a book podcast that, yes, my book podcast is still funked. It's called Overdue. It's at overduepodcast.com. And I read Gillian Flynn's Sharp Objects recently, if you want a book that has a TV adaptation, but otherwise we read books and it's fun. So yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting, what have you been watching?
I have been watching Bratz, and I'll keep it short because it's really a movie and it's about movie people, but it, you know, is on Hulu and it contains enough people who ended up on TV, she says, hopefully. Rob Lowe, John Cryer, director Andrew McCarthy himself, has done some effective guest shots. But Bratz is, I think, sort of loosely based on Andrew McCarthy's Bratz and 80s Story memoir from a couple, 3 years ago. And he's just sort of investigating with as many of his fellow Brat Packers as he can, the effect on all of them and on their careers and on them as sort of young people versus making their peace with the label now. He even interviews the guy who wrote the New York Magazine cover story that like invented the Brat Pack moniker. And also, Rob Lowe makes the point in an interview that the CW and Glee and other aspects of more recent teen culture would not have existed without the Brat Pack, which I think is probably mostly true. So that's why I'm talking about a movie. Anyway, it is a very solid sit for Gen Xers because it's full of these Brat Pack visuals. And then here's Emilio Estevez to do an interview, and he is turning into Martin Sheen, unsurprisingly, but just like seeing the Bartlett jowls on the Mighty Ducks guy is like, whew, it's like the veil is thinning and you could see both into the future and into the past. It's pretty wild. With that said, it's probably too long. It can be uncomfortable vis-a-vis McCarthy not seeming to realize the extent to which only he needs this like talk therapy about being a Brat Packer, and everyone else who agrees to be on camera, because not all of them do, is kind of like, well, yeah, I could see how you might still have felt that way in the 90s, but get over it. Like, they're nice about it, but I don't think that he is necessarily aware of how like he's using some really big feelings and vocabulary words, like, you know, stricken and scorched earth, that are like, you know, sir, you were in sex comedies with Jacqueline Bisset. Like, I don't, let's just bring it down a notch or like a half.
You did one Weekend at Bernie's movie and then you did the sequel. So relax.
Yeah. By that point, you're making adult choices and David Bloom's not responsible for them, nor was he at any time. With that said, he's fairly self-aware of the fact that he's just like a middle-aged guy talking about stuff that is not all that, quote, important in the grand scheme. It's very visually appealing. Wish that James Spader had been on it present day, but like one glimpse of his feathery hair and giant linen blazer as Steph, just, I mean, my heart. And Leah Thompson in particular had a lot of good things to say about physical media, making the Brat Pack seem more immediate and like the bridge to old Hollywood that the Brat Pack may have unconsciously represented. She makes it sound smarter and less woo-woo than I do, but it was really interesting. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was a nice hour and a half. I had to watch it for a project and I was not mad at all. I recommend it. And again, that's on Hulu. I also recommend keeping an eye on your podcast feed for a Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs mini season. We are doing a mini season devoted to 90s film soundtracks. We're going in cron order, starting with Singles. After that, we're doing Pulp Fiction. That will be starting pretty soon. And if you want to vote on ranking these albums, and you do, because they have the force of law, these rankings, by the way, patreon.com/mastass to pitch in and help. And the episodes are available to everyone wherever you get podcasts.
Let me ask you guys something. Let me ask you three questions. Do you like clunky exposition?
Love it.
No.
Do you like a show where half the cast is trying to provide you with narcos and the other half of the cast is doing a bad impression of a Coen Brothers movie? Question number three. So. Do you like Michael Chiklis trying to play a character called Dominic Zulio? Well, if you answered yes to all those questions, and God help you if you did, Hotel Cocaine is your show because what a mess. And it has a creator of Narcos making this stuff. And it just seems like they saw Narcos, you know, like they were driving past the drive-in in 1981. They saw the screen playing Narcos and didn't really know what it was about. And then decided to make a TV show based on what they saw on the screen without audio. That is sort of like one half of this show. Mark Feuerstein is there from Tara's favorite show, Royal Pains.
It is, yes.
He's in a totally different movie than the other half of this cast. He is in something that is trying to be comedic, but is failing. Slightly Coen Brothers-esque take on it. He meets Hunter Thompson.
Yeah, played by John Ventimiglia, Artie Bucco from Sopranos as Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, no.
This is... I feel like what happened was they went to Chris Brancato. He's like, I have another great idea for another drug show. And they were like, great. Can you do it for one half of 1% of what Netflix paid for to make Narcos? And he was like, I'll try.
If I gave you guys seven guesses what streamer it's on, I don't think you would get it. Because it's on one called MGM Plus.
Oh,
boy. Wow.
A platform formerly known as Epix.
You go to the mgmplus.com registration page and it's just like the shrug emoji. Like, I don't know how you do it.
It's not even the same font as Metro. It's not.
I mean, who keeps handing out these pluses to all these people? You can't just call everything plus. Like, it doesn't sound like it's earned here.
Mr. President, please eliminate two pluses.
Yeah. It was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. Do not watch.
And we watched the entire episode to make sure it was bad the whole way through. So we can say with conviction, it was.
Definitely. All right. Here's some better stuff coming your way this Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great to lighten the mood. It's Cult Massacre, One Day in Jonestown. Oh, just an evening? That's available to club members. Go to Extra Hot Great. Go to hell. extrahotgreat.com/club to learn about where we are in our still growing show campaign and sign up on Patreon to actually get the goods. And then right here next week on EHG Prime, we're welcoming back Mr. Joe Reed to talk about Orphan Black : Echoes.
Echoes.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. livewithchampion.com.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, yuck. Everyone is so old and sick around here.
Yeah, this is a hospital.
Yeah, I guess.
Depp Chin, you said a mouthful. Hi, it's me, former college instructor Buncey. Today we are talking about a first season episode of ER, season 1, episode 19, Love's Labor Lost. This episode aired March 9th, 1995. It was directed by Mimi Leader, and it likely needs little in the way of help from me either way, so I will try to keep this brief, but here is my case for why it belongs in the Extra Hot Great Canon. Number one, in case you're not familiar, this is the episode in which Anthony Edwards as Mark Green is treating a pregnant woman, Jodi O'Brien, that's Colleen Flynn, nominated for an Emmy here, when she and her husband Sean, Bradley Whitford, heard of him, first come in for treatment. It seems like she has a garden variety UTI, but it's actually eclampsia, and when Mark decides she should deliver her baby in the ER ASAP and can't get anyone from obstetrics to come downstairs and help him, the case snowballs into tragedy. In the list of memorable episodes from the series run, if it's not the one people always cite first, it's in the top three, along with season six's All in the Family, the immediate aftermath of Carter and Lucy getting stabbed, already in the canon. And I think that season two episode with Clooney and a kid in a storm drain.
Oh, yeah, storm drain. Mm-hmm.
In a list of the 100 best TV episodes of all time, published in 2009, TV Guide had Love's Labor Lost at number six. It will have dropped a bit in the interim, no doubt, but I bet it still cracks the top 20. Number two, it isn't utterly typical of an ER episode. Clooney's Doug Ross functionally vanishes from the episode after the first act, but A, Doug at this juncture frequently kind of sucked, in my opinion, and is not missed here particularly, and B, almost everything else about it exemplifies what the show did so well. As mentioned, I did teach Love's Labor Lost in a TV survey college course. My presentation notes included a contextualization for the kids today of how ER differed from previous medical dramae, namely that previous shows tended to focus on the drama part versus the medical part. ER's literally visceral depiction of emergency medicine was a leap forward in the medical procedural subgenre, but as it turned out, I did not need to sell them on how groundbreaking the show was, because of how effective the assigned episode was, to the point where more than one student was basically like, you and I are in a fight because you made us watch this. We are emotionally wrung out and cannot speak in class today. That is in no small part because it is a classic ER build. It sets the scene with extremely likable patients with whom the audience quickly bonds. Clip two.
I love that sound.
It's great. It's great. Any cramping, any vaginal bleeding?
No.
Can you feel the baby move?
Uh-huh.
Think you can give me a urine sample?
Are you kidding?
No.
Yes, I think I can do that.
And it shows Mark Green as the calm, teaching moment center of a noisy, crowded trauma early in the episode. Clip three.
Call for any type and cross eight units, run the saline wide open. Carter, Deb, guys out of it. Primary survey's done. Now what do you get?
Get a CT.
Narcan, 0.8.
And then you gotta get the...
Glucose, 85.
Get smart, narcissism, not sagely.
Jackie, race 1-2.
Before it slowly ratchets up the tension in the first few acts via the use of timestamps, and as the episode wears on, shorter and shorter scenes and more anxiety-inducing cuts and crossfades, and fewer cuts away to wacky patients, say, trying to remove their own tattoos with a belt sander, or the other major plot in this episode, not exactly an uplift, but it's Benton annoying the surgeon who's trying to fix Benton's mother's broken hip. Not that anyone ever remembers that part of the story, although let's just take a minute and give a hat tip to the great Candy Alexander as Benton's sister, wearily telling Benton to shut up while they're all in the waiting room. Amen. The 360-degree circling of trauma rooms as Jodi O'Brien's situation continues to deteriorate, the legendary gurney cam shot of Susan Lewis crouched over Jodi and holding her baby in as they change rooms, intrusive beeping of machines and hollering of medical personnel while what I think are bongos on the soundtrack underline the proceedings, And of course, that patented ER fourth act cascade of compounding bad outcomes. It is all in this clip, one of the most enduring from an episode with a dozen of them. It's a bit long, but I'm counting on it to do most of my work for me, clip four.
I'm right here, I love Wait you! Out. I'm right here! I'm right here!
High, 170 over 120.
What about anesthesia?
There's no time.
I'll
throw in a local.
Oh, she's seizing!
Grab your life lock.
All right. Let's paralyze and intubate. Versus 4 mg. Norpharon 10.
Get respiratory down here.
7.5.
Here's your EP, 7.5. Suction standing by.
Okay. O2 at 15.
Carter.
We're just gonna bag her for now.
Does she have the breast down?
Hit that tight blood. Cross match down here. Where's the collect panel?
Get
a man
ready.
This is
200 over 130. Broke out.
Okay. Everybody, just take a deep breath, all right? Okay. Hydrolyzation. 10 mates. Another bolus of mag sulfate. Somebody call NICU and get somebody down here for the baby. Somebody physically go up to the OB and drag somebody down here, okay? Go.
Directed by a, quote, film name, Mimi Leader, who won an Emmy for her work here, also pretty typical of ER. The script from Lance Gentile also took home a statue, and the construction and pacing here is smart about what to show us. Blood trickling out of Jodie's nose, and when to drop the sound out, Mark informing Sean O'Brien that Jodie has died. It makes it clear that we're to side with Mark, but it also makes it clear that Amy Aquino's OB attending, Janet Coburn's extreme saltiness at what greets her once she finally shows up to preside, is at least partly justified. It plants the seeds of future obstacles for our protagonists in the form of a lawsuit in Mark's case, and where Carter might choose to do his internship in season two. And this motherfucker is still physically taxing to experience, even knowing the ending and having seen it half a dozen times and taught it at the college level. It's just a merciless build. Number three. This episode is, I would posit, when ER as a quality narrative caught up to its own buzz. The show was a big, popular headline from Go, and the first season up to that point has a handful of fantastic and compelling episodes, but I don't think it was operating at peak powers until Love's Labor Lost. And number four, yes, the Buncee criterion pertains. I did want to keep watching, mainly because it's just too hard and a bummer to leave a sobbing Mark Green on that L train by himself and not queue up another episode and hope for a better outcome. I could say more, but I've probably done as much as I can for this patient down here, so I hope the panel has a bed for Love's Labor Lost in the extra hot Great Cannon Ward.
Thank you, Sarah. Andrew, the only parent on our panel. Please start us.
You're welcome.
Obviously, I think it goes in. I mean, I had forgotten or blocked out just like that moment where Green realizes he's in over his head, but mm-hmm. there's nothing that any, like, nobody is coming to save him from mm-hmm. the decisions he's made. The build of all these decisions that seem like fine in isolation, but like in retrospect, raw, like clearly borderline calls that should not have been made the way that they were made. Just And the way it kind of it reinforces his character as like this stable, like font of knowledge at this ER and at this like teaching hospital, but also like fallible and maybe a little too high on his own supply and like overconfident in himself. And just watching him both like do the job, but also be torn down at the same time by it is, man, it is visceral. It's hard to watch, but you can't stop watching it. So yeah, I think it obviously goes.
I'll go next. Just a couple of notes about the B plot with Peter. They really have a light touch with this, I think, considering how dark it gets. And we talked for on our Patreon about the episode where she has just died. And because it was directed by Quentin Tarantino, that's part of our three mm-hmm. of these miniseries that we're doing this year. And here, Mrs. Benton has just broken her hip. And so she's in the ER and Peter is working on her. And then she's just cries for Helle not to undress her in front of Petey.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rough one. I agree with Sarah, mm-hmm. of course. Candy Alexander is incredible as his sister, Jackie. And, you know, not taking the bait when Peter is clearly in the waiting room just trying to pick a fight with her to feel something different than what he is feeling. None of that is, like, you know, really foregrounded. It's just handled very nicely and subtly, which they are occasionally able to do on the show. It is bombastic a lot of the time. And that's definitely true in the A-plot. I'm so glad that Colleen Flynn was nominated for an Emmy. She should have won. She mm-hmm. should be such a star. Like, I went to look at what she's yes. done afterwards and was like, what horrible man molested this woman? Because she is so, and this role, she's, and part of it is down to the directing too, of course, but she's so mm-hmm. like natural. You never feel like, mm-hmm. Some actors just have this quality where you feel like everything they're saying, something that's occurring to them in the moment versus like that they're reading in a script. And she mm-hmm. has that. And she only gets a couple of scenes to establish her character because a lot of the rest of the time she's, you know, seizing or unconscious or screaming or mm-hmm. whatever. She and Bradley Whitford are, as Sean, are like so cute from their first moment. Like they get mm-hmm. caught being too handsy with each other. And that's adorable. And mm-hmm. then, you know, everything goes horribly wrong and it would still be awful if we didn't already know that she's lovely. But she is also lovely and that makes it even harder. Note about Bradley Whitford, I told Dave this yesterday, this episode aired less than a month after the premiere of Billy Madison, in which he plays one of the hotel company jerks. Very different role would have really caused whiplash to anyone who had seen that first and then seen him in this. But I also want to give him credit because he's got that crazy hairline even 30 years ago, and he's still holding on to most of his hair. So congratulations to him because he has not really yep. lost it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything you said is true. I also think they do a nice job of in build-wise of establishing early that Mark and Susan both think that Dr. Coburn is being condescending to them. And there's mm-hmm. obviously this like chip on the shoulder of the ER docs of like, they don't take us seriously because they picked a different specialty and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. We know we can handle it, this bitch, as Susan says.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's not the case at all. And they should have probably listened to her. And sometimes people mm-hmm. who are specialized know more than you for a reason. The sort of underlying politics of that is also not something that is really hammered home. It's just like part of what builds us to the catastrophe that ends the episode where it's like Andrew said, you know, no one's coming. It's only going to get worse and worse. A kind of flawless episode, including the moments of levity that we get early on. Although we might not remember that. There was also the tattoo guy who tried to take off his booby tattoo with a sander by the time mm-hmm. Mark is crying alone on the L because he fucked everything up. Oh, one last thing. Mm-hmm. When Susan, he gets on and Susan asks if his wife, Jen, is going to be home. Like her Vulcan ass would be any help. She yeah, doesn't seriously. Matter if she's home or not. She's a jerk.
Fuck her.
Yeah. She's really cold. So he's probably better off getting comfort from another stranger on the subway than he would be from Jen. All right, Dave.
Whatever happened to the old woman that was getting a card, get well card signed by all the doctors, and they ask her who it's for, and she says me, and then yeah. according to the time Chiron, she's still there hours later, just roaming the hall in the background, getting mm-hmm. signatures for it. Any resolution to what that was about? No?
No.
Just, how did nobody kick her out of the hospital then for just like this old lady walking around?
It's a county hospital.
Just right. more local color. Yeah. Okay.
More local yeah. color. Local color.
Not a lot to add, except the scene that Sarah did the big long clip of, the moment where like everything's going to shit and Mark just has to like call a room timeout. Not only mm-hmm. is that moment just like, ugh, like it just like it literally takes the air out of you. And then like there's a weird dramatic stillness to everything. There was something about the camera work there that like accentuated it all. That I just want to bring out. It almost seemed like the camera had a reaction time that was like half a second too late if it was a person. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
it had this inertia where it was going to keep on moving to where the action was going, but like had a moment where it's like, oh, something's happening. And it kind of like mm-hmm. restabilizes itself before mm-hmm. they start doing the ER camera circle stuff. And I thought that was very effective. So I thought that was a great piece of cinematography, or whatever you call it at that point, where they're kinetically moving the camera around. So, but yeah, I have never really rewatched ER. I think I watched into at least halfway when it first came out. And I forgot a lot about this episode. I knew that it was like one of the big ones, but I forgot a lot about it. Even like decades later, it hits you in the gut. So that's like,
yep. Sorry.
And that is saying something for a show that's this old, because a lot of the time, the further you go back, the more sort of like scriptily melodramatic something like this can seem. You know, it seems like overwritten, and this doesn't feel like that. This really feels like you were kind of there and experiencing these terrible things.
Yeah.
So great pick. All right, let's make this official. Andrew, canon worthy or not?
Canon worthy for sure.
Ty.
Yes, I agree.
Me too. So that means ER, Season 1, Episode 19, Love's Labor Lost. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who the winner and loser of the week are. Sarah, who's our winner?
Hopefully, it's fans of Homicide: Life on the Street. David Simon hinted on X that NBC has finally dealt with the music rights holdup. That means that Homicide has not been on streaming. It was a very sweet tweet about the various ghosts of actors from the show who have crossed over working on this for the universe. And a hat tip to our esteemed colleague, John Ramos, who, when I woke up this morning, he had texted me about this. I have a brand. And that's it. So I know a tweet from David Simon is not like two sources solid, but I am hoping that he knows what he's talking about and that soon it will be on Peacock or somewhere similar.
Yeah, I believe it when I see it, but it is good news.
And who's our loser, Tara?
Oh, boy. Poor Joey Graziadei, who was the most recent Bachelor, gave an interview last week where he talked about how he ruined his credit by being on the show. He says it cratered. Because he's on the show for like 3 months. You're not allowed to bring your phone or your computer or whatever. And I guess sweet old Joey didn't think, I better put someone in charge of my finances while I'm essentially off the grid, because he missed a credit card payment. So now he and his fiance from the show are living with her friends while they figure it out. So I don't know, because they can't get an apartment. I guess he better hope it works out with her since he's dependent on her friend's indulgence in keeping him housed. Yikes of a story. I hate to say that ABC should prepare these people by giving them like a little primer on like how to handle your business while you're doing our stupid show, but I'm sure they don't get any kind of aftercare, never mind this kind of nitty-gritty stuff. So if you're going to be on The Bachelor, set up auto pay.
Speaking about ruining your credit, do you know what time it is?
Skitty time.
It is game time. This is the fourth of the season. The scores currently are Tara in the lead with 2, Sarah right behind with 1. Value guests looking to get on the board. Today we are playing Country of Origin from Amy Allensbach, who earns herself an extra credit. Topic of her choosing, plus a free shirt or mug or something like that from the EHG store at throughmethods.com. Amy writes, many U.S. properties, TV properties, owe their existence to shows imported from around the world. Guess the name of the show based on the country of origin and some basic metadata about the U.S. show. I'll give you a genre, original air date in the U.S., and the number of seasons aired in the U.S. If you don't get it off that, you can guess again after I give you the name of a key talent related to the show. Could be an actor or a host, depending on kind of show we're talking about. Here's an example at the 3-point level to start us off. The country of origin is the United Kingdom. Here's some metadata. The genre is mockumentary sitcom, and the show originally aired in the U.S. in 2005 on NBC. There have been 9 seasons of this show. So we know this show is...
The Office.
The Office. Correct. All right. If you didn't get it,
I would let you know that the lead actor in this case, we're going to give you Steve Carell. So that's how that works. Guess at both those levels for free. No penalty for taking a crack at 3-point level. Steel meal situation does not apply here. So Tara, take a breather. So let's go to Piggy.
We will start with Tara.
All right, we're going to go Tara, Sarah, Andrew today. We got 27 questions. We're going to throw in two Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge
Ooh.
Zones.
Oh.
Are we ready to play Country of Origin?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, we do start with Tara. Your country of origin is Denmark. This is round one. I think Amy has separated him into low, medium, and high difficulty.
Okay.
Your opinion may vary. The genre is romance reality, and it originally aired in the U.S. in 2014 on FYI. There have been 17 seasons.
That's Married at First Sight.
That is Married at First Sight. Gift vel Forsyth Bleak. My Danish is impeccable.
All right, so that's 3 points?
3 points for Tara.
Thank you.
Sarah. The country of origin for your first show is Israel. Been in the news lately?
Oh my God.
Jesus.
The genre is teen drama. The genre is teen drama, and it originally aired in the U.S. in 2019 on HBO. There have been two seasons. It's an adaptation of an original show from Israel.
Oh, Jesus.
Teen drama.
2019?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Teen drama. Yeah. Euphoria? I don't know.
Euphoria is correct. Oh, yes. 3 points.
Shit. Okay, cool.
All right. Andrew, you got to get this one to keep the ties going. Your country of origin is Japan. The genre is video clip show, and it originally aired as a regular series in the U.S. in 1989 on ABC. There have been 35 seasons.
Oh, God, is it Funniest Home Videos?
I'll give you that one. America's Funniest Home Videos.
Well, yeah, I figured in Japan it wasn't.
No, you're naming the U.S. show. You don't have to worry about
okay,
that.
Okay, yes, yes. It is, well, then it would be America's Funniest
In Japan,
Home
it was
Videos.
Called Fun TV with Kato-chan and Ken-chan.
Mm.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
Your show originated in France. The genre is supernatural drama, and it originally aired in the U.S. in 2015 on A&E. There have been two seasons.
What was this called?
Keep in mind, we want the U.S. show, the U.S. title.
Is it like The Revenants? Shit.
Lead actor, Kevin Alejandro.
Yeah, I still don't know.
Yeah, you were close. The Return.
The Return.
The Return. Sarah D. Bunting, Belgium. Belgium is your country of origin. The genre is reality game show. It originally aired in the U.S. in 2001 on ABC. There have been six seasons.
Six seasons. Who wants to be a Belgianaire? Who wants to be a millionaire? I don't know.
The host was Anderson Cooper.
Oh, the mole.
The mole. Good for one. Good for one. Back to Andrew. The Netherlands is your country of origin. The genre is Stunt Dare Game Show, and it originally aired in the U.S. on NBC in 2001. There have been six original and one revival seasons.
Would it be? It wouldn't be Fear Factor, would it?
Fear Factor is correct.
Oh,
3 points.
Nice.
Okay. Oh, shit.
It was originally called Now or Neverland. No thanks.
I was trying to think, does like eating scorpions qualify as a stunt? Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, I think it does. Everybody's got one more question in round one. Tara?
Yes.
Country of origin is Australia. The genre is improvised comedy, and it originally aired in the U.S. in 2006 on NBC. One season.
Oh, 2006.
Improvised comedy show.
Yeah. I'll take the hint.
Host, David Alan Greer.
Oh, that doesn't help. I do not know.
No, that was a really tough one. Thank God you're here. Thank God you're here.
What? Hmm. Wow.
Rugs. Okay. Shrugs from all. Nobody knows that one. Sorry, Mr. Greer. Back to Sarah. South Korea is your country of origin.
The genre is medical drama and originally aired in the US in 2017 on ABC. There have been 7 seasons. South Korea, medical drama.
The Resident.
Lead actor, Freddie Highmore. Not Bates Motel. Don't say it.
I don't know. I thought that was.
It does cut people, probably, but that's not medically.
One. That's the one with Gary Hagos.
Oh, right. The Aristocrats. I don't know.
Tara, you know this one?
No.
Is it The Good Doctor?
Good Doctor, yeah.
Oh, of course. Fuck.
All right, this will take us into our first score break. It is for Andrew. Great Britain is your country of origin. The genre is situation comedy and originally aired in the U.S. in 1977 on ABC. There have been 8 seasons.
70s sitcoms.
Yeah, there's
from
a lot
UK.
Of them.
God. Yeah, I like just like Hail Mary pass for like All in the Family or something. It's
yeah, probably not. Though. All in the Family, not correct. Lead actor John Ritter.
Oh, Three's Company?
Three's Company. Anybody know the original title of that one?
Oh.
Are you being served? No. Not
yeah,
that.
I knew at one point, but I do not know now.
Man
yeah.
About the House. Man
oh,
about
right.
The
house.
Okay.
All right. Let's get our round one scores.
Okay. Andrew's in the lead. He has 7 points. Ooh. Sarah has 4. I have 3.
Oh. A rare Tara Ariano appearance in the Grossos Equalizer Challenge Zone. All right, Tara, what box do you want?
Oh, I'll take the 90s one.
90s one. All right. Remind you, you also get the year the question is about with the 90s box. Do have to search for TV-related questions inside of the viewing category. So your patience, please. 1991, Tara.
Yes.
What Nickelodeon animated series was named after the cartoonist's apartment manager and one-time college roommate?
Adult Swim or Cartoon Network?
Neither. Nickelodeon.
Oh, Nickelodeon. Oh.
Nickelodeon animated series was named after the cartoonist's apartment manager and one-time college roommate. I'm going to clarify the answer here because that's a poorly worded question, mm-hmm. like without commas and shit.
Okay.
We're talking about 2 different people there. It is not the apartment manager that was also one-time college roommate. Those are 2 different people. Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Animated. Show.
I know. It's not Johnny Bravo because that's Cartoon Network. I don't know.
Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah. What?
1991. Huh. What NBC soap opera outlasted the spin-offs Somerset and Texas before ending a 35-year run?
Another World?
Another World is correct. We need 2 more.
Hey.
1990. What sitcom character lost at Jeopardy despite categories like civil servants, stamps from around the world, mothers and sons, and beer?
Cliff Clavin.
Cliff Clavin, yes. All right. 1 more, Tara.
Okay.
This is from 1990. What sexist comic guest hosted Saturday Night Live, prompting Nora Dunn and Sinead O'Connor to boycott the show?
Andrew Dice Clay.
Andrew Dice Clay is correct, and you have just gained yourself 3 points, Tara. Boo, 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 boo. All right, so let's get quick updates on the scores.
Okay, Sarah has 4. I have 6. Andrew's still in the lead with 7.
All right, let's get back to it with round 2. Amy says these are a little more difficult. Let's find out.
Mm-hmm.
Tara, your first country of origin here in round 2 is the Netherlands. The genre is reality competition, and it originally aired in the U.S. in the year 2023 on Peacock. There have been 2 seasons as of May.
Oh, The Traitors?
The Traitors is correct, yes.
Oh, nice pull.
Sarah.
Yeah.
You've got another show from Israel. The genre is espionage thriller. And it originally aired in the U.S. in 2011 on Showtime. There have been 8 seasons. Jeez, 8 seasons.
No need to ugly cry about this one. This is Homeland.
This is Homeland. Good for 3. Yes. Another one from Japan for Andrew. The genre is business reality. It originally aired in the U.S. in 2009 on ABC. There have been 15 seasons.
And what was the genre?
business reality show.
Business reality show, yeah. On ABC. Oh, it's feels like maybe like Kitchen Nightmares. Just a big swing.
Is that your answer? Kitchen Nightmares?
Yeah, let's just, yeah. I'm gonna need more information.
Okay. Expert Mark Cuban.
Cuban. Oh no, that's Cesar Millan. No. Mark.
Were you gonna say The Dog Whisperer?
Yeah, I was thinking about okay.
It's not The Dog Whisperer. I'm gonna give you that one for free.
No, I'm gonna be mad at myself when I hear it, but I don't know.
All right, anybody know it?
Shark Tank.
Shark Tank, yes. Man, what was Shark Tank originally called in Japan? I believe also in Canada when they brought it there.
Dragon's Den,
yes.
Oh,
yeah, I even
that's
what
it's called in the UK too.
Stupid.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
Country of origin is Colombia. It is a comedy / drama, and it originally aired in the U.S. in 2006 on ABC. There have been 4 seasons. 4.
Ugly Betty?
Ugly Betty is correct for 3, yes. Sarah. Good one for Sarah. Denmark. The genre is crime drama. Originally aired in the U.S. in 2011 on AMC. There have been 4 seasons.
What was the country again?
Denmark.
Was this The Bridge?
It was not.
Ooh.
Murray Enos is your clue.
Oh.
You know, I could probably name this in Danish before I can name what the American version was called for some reason. Because the Danish one is fun to say.
Isn't this a Kinnaman joint? The Killing?
Yes, good for 1. Borba Delson, right? Isn't that?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fun. Rolls off your tongue. Borba Delson. South Korea, Andrew. South Korea is your country of origin. The genre is singing competition, and it originally aired in the U.S. in 2019 on Fox. There have been 11 seasons.
Is it Masked Singer?
It is Masked Singer, yes.
Wow.
Nicely done. Everybody's last question of round 2 coming at you. For Tara from Great Britain. The genre is home makeover show and originally aired in the U.S. in the year 2000. There have been 10 seasons.
God, is it Extreme Makeover Home Edition?
Your host is Alex McLeod from the Clan McLeod. There can be only one.
I feel like I know it less. I don't know.
Nobody? Anybody? Want to take a stab for fun? That's Trading Spaces. Trading Spaces.
Oh.
Okay. All right.
Wow.
All right. This is question 17.
Spread
Eagle. Oh, Spread Eagle.
It is for Sarah from Australia. The genre is drama miniseries and originally aired in the U.S. in 2015 on NBC. There have been 2 seasons.
The Slap?
The Slap is correct.
Hey!
Yes. 3 points. Nicely done.
Oh, God.
All right. This is our last question of round 2. We'll do another score break and challenge zone after this. It is for Andrew, and the country of origin is France.
My children need wine.
The genre is autobiographical crime drama and originally aired in the U.S. in 2022 on HBO Max. 1 season only.
From France, you say?
Yeah, biographical crime drama. It is from France, aired in the U.S. in 2022, HBO Max.
I think I need more information.
Here's a lead actor for you, Colin Firth.
I can picture the big, stupid, like, Apple TV promo card thing, but I can't remember the name part, which is not helpful. Yeah. I don't know.
Anybody? Sarah?
Staircase.
And that's round 2. Let's get the scores, please.
Okay. Sarah and I are now tied with 12 points each. Andrew barely behind with 10. This could change everything.
It could. All right, Andrew, here's how this works. Tara knew the score. She knew what to guess. I have a whole bunch of Trivial Pursuit questions behind me. I got 90s, 80s, the original Rays one that came with Trivial Pursuit back in the day. And for you, I dug out before the show, if you wish, golden trivia card Star Trek edition.
Nice.
That could be your pick if you wish. These are, I think, published after Star Trek 3, but before Star Trek 4, somewhere around there. Anyways, okay. Give you the vintage.
All right, I'm going to grab it. Any lifeline I can get, I'm going to do the Star Trek
one. Okay, in addition to that, the cards are a little bit different in this one. It's not six categories on a card. It's one category in a card. So you get to pick your category and get six questions on that category. Okay? Mm-hmm. So your choices are General Trek Trivia, Starfleet, Aliens, Quotes, Alien Worlds, or The Ship's Crew.
Let's do General Trivia to start.
All right.
Well. Yeah.
Good luck.
All right. So if you get three of these six questions right, we'll give you 3 points. If you sweep it, we're going to give you six. We're going to double that.
Ooh, okay.
Now, I'm showing the card on Zoom, but just so you look at home, there is one question with an asterisk next to it. That is the difficult question. I'm assigning that answer 2 points. So in theory, you can get a sweep by answering one wrong and that one right.
Okay.
I'm really RuPauling up the rules here on this one. Question number one, Andrew. In Star Trek II, what prompted McCoy to offer Kirk a tranquilizer on the bridge?
Tranquilizer on the
what
bridge?
What was the action that was precipitated that offer?
Were they just like pulling out of like space dock?
Correct. Piloting the ship out of dry dock by an inexperienced officer. Yes. Question two.
Even if I get all these right, it might be more embarrassing for me than getting them wrong.
Don't think like that.
No. There's a big Star Trek channel on our podcast Discord that is cheering you along right now.
All right, great. Okay.
How were the unicorn-like ape creatures killed in A Private Little War? What was the method of their destruction?
Did they shot them with phasers?
You are correct.
Not on weeds.
Name the Canutu woman who saved Kirk from the poison of a native creature.
What a Canutu.
Oh, I do not. This one I do not know. Well. Yeah.
Her name was Nona, also Nona. From A Private Little War.
Nona the Canutu.
All right. Hmm. You still have a chance to sweep mathematically. Okay. So that was your one wrong to sweep. You need one more right to get 3 points. Mm-hmm. Number four. Which crew member unsuccessfully attempted to execute the Vulcan nerve pinch in a Star Trek movie?
This is Dr. McCoy in Star Trek III Search for Spock when he has Spock's Katra inside him and is trying to Vulcan nerve pinch somebody so he can do a crime.
Oh, so close. You forgot a little bit of information. No, you didn't. That was
oh, no.
All right. You've now got three extra points.
Nicely done.
This is the difficult question coming at you, so you got to get this to continue.
Okay.
What aliens were fought briefly by the landing party using a small yet powerful mortar as a weapon? So the name of the aliens fought with a mortar.
Oh, a mortar. Oof.
What aliens were fought briefly by the landing party using a small yet exceptionally powered mortar as a weapon?
Oof. Man, I don't remember this one. My TOS knowledge is not as encyclopedic as some of my later knowledge is.
Well, you know, it's a original series Alien, so
I don't know, like the Gorn or something.
Gorns,
what?
Yes.
What? Incredible.
I would have guessed Tribbles. Well done.
If you get this one right, we're adding 3 more points to your total.
Okay. All right.
Oh boy, this is hard.
Oh, no.
In which episode did Chekhov complain of an excessive number of medical tests?
In what episode?
Yeah. You're correct so far.
Corbinite Maneuver.
No, the Deadly Year. So close. Well the done, though.
That was a good run. Right. Very good.
All right, so we're adding 3 to Andrew's score. So quickly update his scores, please.
We sure are. Now, Sarah and I are still tied with 12, but Andrew is ahead with 13.
All right. Everybody has 3 questions, so a maximum of 9 points can be gained for everybody. Here we go. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Country of origin is Venezuela. The genre is romantic comedy drama, and it originally aired in the U.S. in 2014 on the CW. There have been 5 seasons.
I think that's Jane the Virgin.
You are correct, yes. Sarah, Spain. The genre is police procedural dramedy. Okay. And it originally aired in the U.S. in 2014 on NBC. There have been two seasons. So, genre is police procedural dramedy. 2014 NBC. Two seasons.
NBC Southland.
Lead actor, Deborah Messing.
So it's Mom Cop Cop Mom, but what was the show actually called?
Oh. Let's... Oh, one of the overwrought redhead shows from that time. Let's say Mysteries of Laura. Fuck it.
Woo! Yay.
That should be like one of those Netflix categories as you're just trying to find something to watch.
Overwrought redhead
shows. They come from a long line of them. No offense was intended.
All right, nice save on the 1 point. Back to Andrew with The Netherlands. The genre is reality competition. It originally aired in the U.S. in the year 2000 on CBS. There have been 25 seasons.
CBS, is that...
2000. CBS.
2000 on CBS. Yeah. I don't... Survivor is not CBS, but I'm going to say Survivor.
Survivor is CBS, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's had it more than 25 seasons.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. The host is Julie Chen Moonves. Julie Chen. .. Moonves.
She's still married to that guy?
Yep. Yes, she is.
Boy. Oh, no.
Oof.
Man, this is not ringing a bell for me.
Oh.
No.
Tapping out?
Yeah.
Sarah? Tara?
Big Brother.
Big Brother.
Big
yes.
Brother. Big Brother. Oh. Okay.
Tara.
Yes.
Argentina. The genre is crime drama and originally aired in the U.S. in 2022 on Fox. There have been three seasons.
Fox crime drama. Is it like Alert, Missing Persons Unit or something like that?
It is not. Lead actor here for you. Elodie Young.
Yeah. It's The Cleaning Lady.
Cleaning Lady, good for one, yes. Sarah.
Yeah.
Country of origin is Sweden. The genre is reality competition and originally aired in the U.S. in the year 2000 on CBS. There have been 46 seasons.
Survivor, please. Damn you.
Bonus point, name the original title, not in Swedish, but translated from Swedish. Anybody?
Oh, it's like Outlast or something?
Nope.
It's like, is it Castaway or something?
Kind of, but okay. No. Expedition Robinson.
Sure.
Oh, right.
All right, Andrew, Japan. Okay. The genre is superhero show and originally aired in the U.S. in 1993 on Fox Kids. There have been three seasons.
Also, there was a Fox Kids.
Right.
I'm going to put an asterisk on three seasons to say we're talking about this particular title.
Mm-hmm.
Of a bigger set.
Okay.
Sure. Three seasons on Fox Kids. The original X-Men cartoon? Okay.
Lead actor, Austin St. John.
Austin St. John. No, I. This is another one that I think I'll know when you say it. Like, I don't know.
One more piece
Turtles.
Of information. Yeah. A show recently rejected by Netflix in the news last
That's
week.
That's what I thought.
Oh, geez.
It's a show that demands you go something.
Oh, Inspector Gadget.
Nope.
Nope.
It's the other one.
The other one.
Go-Go Power Rangers. This is Mighty
Go-Go
Morphin
Power Rangers.
Power Ranger.
Oh, damn, okay.
All right. Everybody has one question left, so let's get the scores.
Okay, Andrew still has 13. Sarah and I are still tied, but now with 16 points each.
All right, mathematically, this could be a three-way tie. Let's find out what happens.
Oh, my God.
Tara.
Yeah.
You've got Australia.
Mm-hmm.
The genre is cooking competition and originally aired in the U.S. in 2017 on Fox. There have been 13 seasons.
Since 2017? That's too many.
The seasons are all one quarter episodes long.
Which Gordon Ramsay bullshit is this? Is this MasterChef?
It is not.
Okay.
Your talent is a judge, Judge Curtis Stone.
No, Mr. Lindsay.
Oh, that's where I know that name from. Okay. Yep.
Is it Master Chef Junior?
It's not. There's too many cooking shows.
Yeah.
Apparently, even on network TV, there's too many cooking shows because I've never heard of My Kitchen Rules.
Yeah, that does not sound familiar to me either.
Okay.
Is that like the rules for his kitchen, or he's like, My Kitchen Rules?
Yeah, I don't know.
Man. Yeah.
I was wondering that myself.
Based on what I know of him, I think it's the second thing.
Okay.
My Kitchen Rules, babe.
Good for Curtis.
It's terrible.
Okay. Yeah. To Sarah.
Yeah.
Germany. The genre is reality crime and originally aired in the U.S. in 1988 on Fox. There have been 28 seasons.
Reality crime.
On Fox, 20-something seasons.
28 seasons.
Reality crime,
Reality crime.
It's a reality show that revolves around crime.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Are you good?
Yeah.
Can I answer? Cops?
Cops?
What?
No.
Holy shit.
Your host is John Edward Walsh Jr.
Sure.
America's Most Wanted.
Yes, correct. Wow.
Okay. I only needed 1 point.
Get in the ballpark of the original German title here, and I will actually give you a game point, not even a day point. Anybody.
In the ballpark of the original?
In the ballpark. Like, just sort of like get in something that I can consider kind of close.
Find my felon.
Stop criminals.
No. Andrew?
Crime boys.
I wish I could give you a real game point for saying crime boys. It is not close. I will give you a day point.
What you want?
File reference XY unresolved is the translated title of that one.
Lord.
Yes. I really want to say it in German, but I'm not going to because I like our listeners too much. All right, Andrew, here is your last one. It is from Great Britain. Okay. I mean, it's okay. The genre is situation comedy and originally aired in the U.S. in 1972 on NBC. There have been 6 seasons.
The genre is just sitcom?
Situation comedy, yep.
Situation comedy, okay.
Yeah, well, they say the whole thing in Britain because they're fancy and shit.
Right, because it's the formal formal version.
The Queen's comedy.
1972.
Yeah, 6 seasons.
6 seasons. Can I get a star?
You sure can. Red Fox.
Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son from Steptoe and Son. In the UK. No. That's Steptoe. Adorable.
Did it have the same theme song in the UK?
And yeah, it was a rubbish yard in the UK. Scores, please, Tara.
Okay. Andrew finished with 14. I had 16. Sarah is our victor with 17.
Closty mosty. All right, let's do the tiebreaker. First person to shout out the correct answer wins a steel meal for future use in a game where you can use steel meals.
Mm-hmm.
Shout it out at any part of this. Frankly, if someone doesn't get it off the country of origin alone, I'm going to be gravely disappointed. Are you ready?
Oh,
are you locked in? We locked
in?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Yeah.
Countries of origin, Denmark and Sweden.
The bridge.
The bridge is the correct answer there. Yes, co-production. Sarah's done with a little bit of lag. I'm giving that one to Sarah D. Bunting.
Sarah.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Talking about the fourth season of The Boys, because when you reach over and put your hand into a pile of goo that was your best friend's face, you'll know what to do. Forget it, Sarah, Andrew, and Tara. It's Chinatown. Before going around the dial with stops at RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, Star Trek Discovery, The Simpsons, Bratz, and Hotel Cocaine. Sarah's canon mortality rate this week was 0%. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Sarah was a winner of this week's Game Time from Amy. Next up, it's Cult Massacre. Day went into town. Yay! Remember.
Listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
everyone told me to pick Buttigieg instead.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Masking God.
And Andrew Cunningham.
He ate out a dog. It's different.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra. Great.
Motherfucker, I just logged in 5 minutes ago.
What's happening?
This shit.
Okay, yeah, you gotta hit keep me logged in. Sorry. Hit keep me logged in, but spoiler alert, that will not keep you logged in.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.